individual companions get an endowment.
Okay. Let's get going again. So now we're changing topic, moving on to an IFRS 16 question. And Bruce, I was going to say that in the same way that every time I hear the words IFRS 9, I sit up a little bit straighter. That's true of Catherine for IFRS 16. Just to put you on notice.
I'll be kind.
What would you
know? I am handing over to you, Nicola.
Agenda paper 5 discusses how an entity accounts for a particular subsurface rights contract. The request asked whether IFRS 16, IAS 38, or neither standard applies in accounting for the contract. Paragraph 5 outlines the fact pattern, and paragraph 7 summarizes the various views identified by the submitter. Based on those differing views, paragraphs 10 to 15 discusses whether an entity considers IFRS 16 or IAS 38 first in determining the accounting treatment for the subsurface right. The conclusion is that it applies IFRS 16 first, and the paper then analyzes how to apply the definition of a lease in IFRS 16 to the fact pattern submitted, discussing, is there an identified asset? Secondly, does the customer have the right to obtain substantially all of the economic benefits from the use of the identified asset throughout the period of use? Lastly, does the customer have the right to direct the use of the identified asset throughout the period of use? Based on our analysis, we conclude in paragraphs 38 and 39 that the contract described in the submission contains a lease as defined in IFRS 16. Accordingly, the right to control the use of the subsurface rights are accounted for as a lease applying IFRS 16. First of all, we will ask question 1 on page 14, which is whether you agree with our analysis of the application of IFRS 16 summarized in paragraphs 38 to 40 of the paper. Afterwards, I will explain the focus of the tentative agenda decision and ask for your comments on that.
Okay, Martin.
I have a more general question, so therefore, even me first. Thank you. For me, the question is, are we only talking about subsurface rights? So is that topic not bigger? And I would expect then a discussion on that, for example, above surface rights. So considering you have property and your neighbor has a roof, and this roof is more or less also in part across your property, you have an exact area where that roof is, and so on. Isn't that the same? Would that not come to the same conclusion? Or, for example, you are doing advertising on a wall of a building, and you have a screen, and you are highlighting that advertising on a specific area of that building on a specific part of the wall. So I guess the topic overall is broader, and if we just come up with a solution for that, at least with regard to our non-agenda decision, we should also say they are similar areas, because otherwise we got submission by submission by submission. Before we start a discussion on the very details, that would be my question to you.
I suppose maybe I'd ask a question back, Martin, as to whether I agree. First of all, in the sense that, as I say, we think the main part of this question focuses around identified asset and particularly the notion of physically distinct that's in IFRS 16. That question in the couple of examples that you gave, there are clearly examples as well, well, that must be a central sort of question to be answered as well in the context of considering whether the contract contains a lease. At least to date, we haven't heard, I'm not saying they're not out there, but we haven't heard questions on those other aspects. We clearly got a question on this, but so I don't know.
If an easy example, the electricity grids, for example, which go across the countries. Yeah. So,
Just to add to what Petrina said, I would agree with you that there could be lots of other cases where I would think you should be asking very similar questions to decide whether or not you've got something which meets the definition of a lease. So I don't think it's unique to this fact pattern. Having said that, this is the question we've got. And even though you'll see in the staff analysis that we don't make a distinction simply because that this is underground, if you like, you'll see from some of the other views that are touched upon in the submission that others might have a different view. And so I think the context matters a bit for the particular question that's been asked, even though I think the analysis could certainly hold for many different fact patterns based on what we've done in the paper. Mm. But I think that's my long way of saying I think we want to stick to the fact pattern. Andrew.
In answer to the staff's question, yes, I agree with the analysis, so I'm very comfortable with that. On the question of widening the scope, while I can see that there are elements that might be similar for above surface rights, in practice you start getting a little bit tangled up in different facts and circumstances. I can think of lots of questions around duality of purpose, of things where a single structure is used for something and then you rent out part of that structure for someone else to do something else on it. The complexities arise rather quickly. And so this is a question that we've been asked. I'd prefer to keep the scoping to this particular question, keep it to the subsurface rights. If we then get asked about above surface rights, we can talk about them.
But I think it would have to be a very specific question, because I can tell by the way you responded, I was thinking of something different to what you were. So,
yeah.
Bruce.
Yeah. I was actually going to say I agree with the Stoss analysis of the paper. I think the scoping's right on.
Thank you. Reinhardt?
I also agree with the staff analysis in terms of how to apply the requirements of IFRS 16 to determine if this is an identified asset. What is, though, concerning to me is I understand that for the U.S. companies have come to a different view based on essentially the same words under U.S. GAAP. And so I just worry about the potential for disparity between how IFRS 16 and the requirements in IFRS 16 might be applied under IFRS as compared to U.S. GAAP, and how do we reconcile that? And so I think it would be important to the extent that the discussions haven't already occurred, to reach out to the FASB staff to determine whether they've taken this issue on board, have addressed this issue, and if there's anything else, perhaps, that they have considered in that might suggest a different view. But having said that, I think the staff analysis is very compelling.
And maybe on mention of this, Reinhard, it might be useful if I shared with you any conversations that we had. And so to your point, I think you're right, because this question in our analysis focuses on the definition of the lease requirements, this is the area of IFRS 16 that has got fully converged words with the US GAAP leases standard. And so it's right to say that a question in these words, you could say the same question, exactly the same question could arise in the context of the words in topic 842 of US GAAP, which is the same, by the way, for any question we get on IFRS 15. So like we do in that, by the way, any time that a question comes to you that, you know, requires analysis of converged requirements, we always contact the FASB staff. We discuss the topic with them, and we always ensure that we provide a draft of our paper to them before it's finalised, so they have an opportunity to comment. So in the context of this, we follow that same process, by the way, as we do in all of the, you know, the other questions that have come through in IFRS 15.
I think our job is to read our words in the first instance, although, of course, there's other factors. Bertrand.
I agree with the staff analysis and conclusion, and I agree with the way it's reflected in the agenda decision. I was a bit disappointed that the agenda decision has been shortened a bit by comparison to the contents of the agenda paper, and I think I would be in favor of reincorporating all the rationale you have developed in the agenda paper, which is very clear, which might be useful to get a comprehensive understanding of how to handle those paragraphs in IFRS 16, because it's not just subsurface rights. It might be the acquisition of a capacity transmission, for instance.
whether you end up with the same conclusion or not. It might be it's a lease or it's a service contract. It's not the but it's exactly the same paragraphs that are used to analyze those contracts. So it's not just, I think it might be useful to reflect in the agenda paper the rule analysis you developed very well in the agenda paper.
Okay, thank you. Goro.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with the staff analysis and the conclusion and also the wording of agenda decisions. And I have the same concern as Reinhardt raised, that the if this, you know, that the IFRS 16 and the U.S. leasing standards are pretty much converged regarding that the balance sheet side. And the, I suppose that, you know, that the case, that entity who are, you know, FitCheck, you know, worried about this case should be global companies. So that the, if the U.S. companies and IFRS adopters have a different accounting using the similar standards, that would be very, very confusing to the financial statement page point, user's point of view. And regarding the point that Martin raised, that the above surface rights, I think that the this agenda decision includes that, you know, that the phrase on page 16, the sixth line from the bottom, the space being underground does not in isolation change because it is an identified asset. The specified underground space is physically distinct in the way, same way that the specified area of the space on the surface of the land would be physically distinct. I think this is that the, you know, that the reference to the above surface light, and the, I think that this is right. So the, I don't know why that the submitter, you know, raising the question of this. But clearly that we are, you know, we are applying the lease standards on the above surface, and I simply do not understand why that the surface light should be treated differently.
Thank you. Young Sir?
Yeah, the, I want to say I agree with the staff analysis. You know, it's very compelling, so I agree with that. But as for the Martin's comment, I think we cannot extend the scope of the agenda decision, especially wall is totally different from underground or overground space. So we need some kind of extra questions to the staff to answer to whether the wall can be a part of the lease or not. And there could be many other questions for other areas. So I don't think we have to extend the scope, but we have to keep the scope as narrow as in here. But I have another, you know, the comment. My comment is that, you know, this agenda decision doesn't seem to be in line with the submitter's question. The submitter's question was whether IFRS 16 can be applied to the underground space, that we, what we explained was only, you know, whether there is a underground space is a identifiable asset or not. That's the conditions in the definition of the lease. The submitter asked all those three, but we answered only one of it. So that is my only concern. So what I'm suggesting is that, you know, we can just directly answer to the submitter's question, but we just say the controllability or other conditions are soon to be met, so that we analyze only the identifiable asset in the general decision, then we can directly answer to the submitter's question. That is only my comment.
Guy?
I found the staff paper very helpful to laying out the issue. I have to admit, when I first encountered this, my thoughts weren't as coherent as the way the staff has laid it out in the paper. So the paper was very, very well done, and it's really helped me bring clarity in my own mind to the core issue here, which I agree is there an identified asset that's physically distinct. Going beyond that and talking about the right to direct the use of the asset, in my view, can get very facts and circumstances specific. And I'm not sure there's
as much of a sort of interpretive question inherent in that aspect of the submission. So I personally am quite comfortable limiting the tentative agenda decision to that core issue about identified asset and physically distinct. In terms of the comments that Reinhard and others have raised about U.S. GAAP, it is on the surface, excuse the pun, a bit concerning about the potential for such a fundamental difference in scoping here. And if I understand the U.S. thoughts, or at least some of the U.S. thoughts as expressed in the submission, at least some of those thoughts hinge on whether the identified asset is intangible or not. You know, I think the way the staff has analyzed that in the paper and has concluded it's tangible makes sense to me. I'm thinking that's the right answer. It is a bit concerning that that's not necessarily the view of some in the U.S. But I guess that is what it is. But if we believe it's tangible rather than intangible, I wonder if it's important to more explicitly state that in the tentative agenda decision, so that someone doesn't then potentially go to paragraph 4 of IFRS 16 and apply a U.S. view that it's intangible and therefore I'm able to scope it out of IFRS 16. I think it's implicit in the agenda decision when we talk about it being physically distinct. That has a tangible notion to it, obviously, but I think given this U.S. view, if we really believe it's tangible, I think it would be useful to call that out in the agenda decision.
Thank you. Tony.
My comments are very, very similar to Guy's. I agree with the staff analysis and with the staff's conclusions. But I actually wondered whether the agenda decision answers the question we were asked, which is, does IS 38 or IFRS 16 apply? Mm-hmm. At the moment, it tells me that there is an identifiable asset and explains why there's an identifiable asset. But like Guy, it doesn't go on to say, well, actually, there is a lease, and it's a lease of a tangible asset, and therefore IFRS 16 is the right standard. And I think if that's what we're trying to do and answer the specific question that we got, then I think that's probably what we ought to do, because at the moment, I think it runs the risk of leaving it hanging, and that people might not appreciate the nuance that for something to be physically distinct, that sort of implies it's physical. But it's very much an implication rather than a statement.
Thank you. Carl?
Yes, I agree with staff's analysis and conclusion and support the wording of the as currently drafted.
Thank you.
I had similar concerns or comments as Guy and Tony in terms of did we answer the question if IFRS 16 or IAS 38 was the applicable guidance. And I think in paragraphs 10 through 15 of the paper, it talks about which standard you apply first, which I think is helpful, and I think should be added to the tentative agenda decision. The one thing that came to mind is that when we're thinking about, I don't remember which paper it is now, the cloud computing, where we're also looking at the interaction between IFRS 16 and IAS 38, that the clarity that's defined here in terms of which standard you look at first should be consistent. And so we might want to think about as we go through that paper, I think it's tomorrow, just making sure we've got a consistent view in which you look at first. And I think you get to the same, I don't think it changes the answer and the staff's analysis and conclusion, but I think it might be helpful just to maybe draw those pieces together from a consistency standpoint.
Thank you. Andrew? That's you, Don.
Not that I had another 4 months to go. Yeah. Okay, I'll have an early bath instead.
I didn't make any comments about the wording of the tentative agenda decision. Two things. One is that I think that the more explicit reference to a tangible asset would be helpful. The other is that I paused a little bit, like some others, on where the tentative agenda decision stopped, because it tips into we have a right to use an identified asset. And I thought it would be helpful for us to deal with the question of whether there is, in fact, a lease to account for here, because we haven't quite got past that. Now, if I look at IFRS 16, there are plenty of illustrative examples, and there is specific guidance in the standard. And so perhaps what we could do, rather than going into a huge amount of detail, is simply include references to relevant parts of IFRS 16 and conclude that in the specific fact pattern of this case, there is a lease to account for, and just have that additional bit on the end of the agenda decision.
Paul?
So my first suggestion is, at FASB in the corner, they have a extended clause, so when people drop their nameplates, they can just go and they can and
I'd
they can pick it up.
On
so we
floor.
Need an extended claw.
there it was.
Or that's the other way to do it.
Yeah, I'm just hoping you didn't flip the camera back on to me.
I agree with a number of the comments around the table about I think we need this agenda decision to be expanded to cover more than just that the asset is specified. And just some specifics in dealing with scope, need to point out specifically why it's a tangible, not intangible. A lot of discussions around what's happening in the U.S. In the U.S., no, FASB has not addressed this, not standard setting going on, but there's been discussions amongst the firms, and one of the points they make is that this is analogous to air rights. And in business combination literature, both in the US and in IFRS 3, air rights are listed as an intangible asset. And so the question, well, why is, you put something up in the air, why that would be out of the scope, but put something underneath the ground that's in the scope of, or it could be in the scope of IFRS 16. So I think that would be helpful to address. And you lay it out, I think, mostly in the staff analysis. I also think when we talk about specified asset, it's important to lay out that I think you're implying that the contract and what was specified in the contract, the boundaries, the length, the height, the width, that specifies the unit of account, which is important not only for whether there's a specified asset, but it's also important in the analysis of do you have substantially all the economic benefits. So I think that would be helpful to lay out. And then when it comes to control of the right to use, the other part of that is the decision-making rights, and the staff lays out that it's in the paper that the rights are predetermined. I agree with that, but then it'd be helpful to go into how, in this case, the pipeline, the utility, operates the asset, because that's then gets you into meeting that criteria.
Okay, thank you, Gary.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask Bob a question that just poking a bit on the air rights, recognizing planes fly at different altitudes and deviate, the route. For weather or air traffic, that wouldn't be the case here. The answer is no. You can have a pipeline, and if you can have a surface lease to build a building on it, that no one I don't think would qualify a land, say a land lease is not a lease. How would it be different if it's just 4 feet below it? It's hard to envision why that would be an intangible, to my way of thinking, and I think it's very different from air route rights. That's just an opinion, I'm not speaking for anybody, but I'm just curious as to the thought process.
So, Gary, when I was explaining, I wasn't arguing against the stuff.
Okay.
I was just, this is an argument that's being used.
Okay. It seems pretty clear to me, this is a tangible asset, that under lease, because it's no different than if it's on the surface or a few feet down.
I understand.
Okay. Sorry. that's background. I'm going to move on to question two, which is whether the committee agrees with the staff's recommendation not to add the matter to the standard setting agenda. Show of hands, please.
That is everyone.
Hi. Do you want to comment on...
Okay, I don't know if it's appropriate for the alternatives.
Well, are you happy with the alternatives? So the big picture question was whether or not the tentative agenda decision sort of stops where it stops, or whether we go on and say more.
Yeah, I think on that point, it feels like we've heard a lot of voices suggesting we should go further. Just to clarify, I think Guy wonderfully articulated, possibly better than we would have done ourselves, why we decided to stop where we did, because it was, you know, we did feel that the identified asset was the core of the problem, I think was the way that he'd worded it. That said, taking the points on board, going down a route similar to what Andrew suggested, which would perhaps find a middle ground, because we don't think there's necessarily anything new to add on the right to direct piece, but we could put some references in and make forward at that step. Be covered tonight.
Okay. And did you?
I do think it's important that we clarify that IFRS 16 you look at first.
Yeah.
That was a good point.
Yeah.
Which follows the analysis on the paper.
Yeah.
I think also a lot of people suggested that we make a specific observation that we're dealing with something tangible here.
Absolutely, that the underground space is tangible.
So with those amendments and with the proposal of going further in the tentative agenda decision to actually conclude that it is a lease, can I get a show of hands, please?
I think that's everyone.
That's everyone, yeah.
All right, thank you.
This one
might be. Yeah, it could be. Yeah, sure.
Liz, can I just check that you're on the phone?
We're way ahead.
Yeah, I have been messaging her, so she's hopefully standing ready, but maybe not quite so
late. Unnamed participant has joined the conference.
Liz, are you the unnamed participant?
I indeed am the unnamed participant.
We outed you now.